Good afternoon. Good afternoon. I'm Paulette. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to welcome you all to the wilderness, the essence of growth is our topic. Our first speaker will be Mark S. from Arizona. I'll give you Mark.
I guess I'd like to thank Jack for not showing up. My name is Mark Schweitz. I'm an alcoholic. Through the grace of a God who is love and the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm sober 9,305 days today, and I'm grateful for that. I came here this afternoon to support a friend. This panel or topic is a little heavy on Arizonans. Now we have, and I can just speak for me. It's not because I do willingness well, or we do willingness any better than anybody else and anywhere else on the planet. But that's just, you know, it speaks well of my activity in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous at age 20, I was invited to participate in my recovery. And I was told that my participation in recovery is vital in terms of how I'm going to be, will I be sober or not? Or what type of sobriety am I going to have? And the key to all of those things was willingness. Our topic is willingness, the essence of growth. It just so happens that I actually sit in a couple of men's circles. Many of the men that are in the circle are in recovery. And one of the things I was just recently challenged on was willingness about 6 weeks ago. And I don't know about you, but I'm a guy that believes in a philosophy of working and reworking the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not a one-time through person. And so I was gifted early on in sobriety about working with others and taking them through the steps. And in that process, it used to be I would speak, you would listen kind of a thing. That's how I was taught. That's how I did it. I met a guy by the name of Paul in Chicago. And Paul introduced me to the concept of actually swapping steps. I was about 10 years sober. And so what that looked like was I did my 4-step. He did his 4-step with me. And so I learned this concept of swapping. And what that had to do with willingness for me was there's a part of me that believes that I know everything. Okay? There's a part of me, and I have spent 46 years in building this persona, I want you to know. I've worked hard at it and looking good. And this, you know, the exact nature of my wrongs, as I've discovered in working and reworking the steps, is that I often feel like I'm not enough. And so that manifests itself in a variety of ways. And one of the ways it manifests itself in my life, in AA, or, you know, my AA is my life and I have another life too. And the way that shows up is I don't want to appear that I need you. And so the way I do that is I've been there, done that. Oh, that step? Know it. Got the talk, you know. 9,300 days, I've heard willingness a few times. You know, I've sat in meetings on willingness a few times. And so what this man challenged me to do is to be open to a spirit of newness. And he quoted somebody that laid something out of a couple thousand years ago that said, "Behold, I make all things new." And there's another group within our fellowship that I've met that taught me a prayer called the set-aside prayer. I don't know if any of you know it. And it goes something like this. God, help me set aside everything I think I know about fill in the blank. Willingness, the steps, you, this circle, me, you. Help me to be open to a new experience of you, of the steps, of AA, of willingness, of myself, of God. And I try to say that prayer as a mantra. And it helps me stay focused in the meeting. I think willingness, they say that these things are indispensable, willingness being one of those. And for me, early on, as I was saying, I was actually sponsored into service, and I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful that I didn't have the opportunity to choose. And what that means is we need a coffee person. You're it. We need a greeter. You're it. And back then we used to wash the coffee cups and we used to wash the ashtrays. And it was we used to wash the floors, all that kind of stuff. And we were sponsored into service and we had these little positions in it. The miracle of that was I don't know that I was really willing to do it, but I did it anyway. And part of that was around that what I had going on wasn't much. So it wasn't like I had a lot of options, right? And so I learned that wonderful concept that what I feel about it didn't matter. And I get to share that with my sponsees now. Did I ask you if you wanted to do it? It wasn't a requirement kind of a thing. That's the great thing. As a father, I get to do that too, what my parents did for me. Oh, you have an opinion? Thanks for sharing. So the way willingness, I guess, shows up today for me is in new beginnings and seeing things new. And I'm recently married. I'm 15 months in, and so is she. And this is her first conference, and she's got one of those yellow badges, and a lot of people are asking her, what's the yellow badges? Well, she married into it, and you know, it's been awesome. I remember one of the things that comes to mind is when I asked Marty to marry me, she said something very powerful. I'm not going to quote it verbatim, but she said that she was afraid, but she was willing not to be. And this willingness to walk through it, to own who we are, and yet show up anyway. And I'm happy to report that the years that I spent in Alcoholics Anonymous pretending to not have any character defects is over. And that I heard a story once about that there was a place for horses to pose to learn to hide their spots. And I must have gone to that place, too, because I was exhausted posing not to show any of my brokenness. And yet, that's a prerequisite to get into this deal. So the willingness to bring all of me into my life really happened as a series of having events in my life happen that I couldn't control. And those were things like a divorce that just brought me to my knees. Death in my immediate family, cancer, and then my best friend, my brother Paul, died at age 47, 4 or 5 years ago, actually. And so I had these things happening in my life, and you were there all the time with your arms open. And I was even telling my sponsees that, you know, be willing, open your arms. We're here. This is the safest place on the planet for you to be you. We're waiting for you, you know, but we can't see you because you're not showing up. And then it happened for me. And I'm so grateful that the love and tolerance of this circle was so powerful that you loved me into sobriety and gave me this gift that I can, in fact, embrace both shadow and light, that I can see my brokenness as my greatest gift. My ex-wife used to say that her character defects got her here and her character defects keep her here. I don't know. All I know is that I need to be in this circle. I also know that I want what you have. There are many people here that have a lot more days than 9,000 days. And there's a lot more people that have days less than 9,000 days. And I believe in an abundant God and a God that does not hold His grace or spread it just on certain people. So I have to be awake and aware. And I have to be open. And so when I was asked if I would get up here and speak because Jack didn't show up, I said what we were taught to say, and that's yes. Thanks for letting me share.
That spirit of willingness, what you have to do. Now for our second speaker, we have Jolie from Arizona.
Not quite as tall as Mark. My name's Jolie. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you all for coming. How exciting. Is everybody excited about being here? Isn't this just so cool? This is awesome. What an honor. What an honor to be a part of this. What an honor to stand up here. Oh, my gosh. Wow, looking in the book and seeing my name. Me? They obviously haven't heard my story. They don't know who I am. I don't know who I am. I'm still finding out. But I'm really enjoying who I am. I'm having a blast. I'm like, hi, everybody, like you're all my best friends. And you are. You know where I came from. You know why I'm here. And, you travel the same path in some fashion or another. And that's the gift, is I can look at you in the eye. And like a gentleman at the hotel said to me yesterday, I wasn't wearing my badge. And he said, I knew you were in the program. You can tell, you have love in your eye. You have excitement. You have happiness. You've been there, and you know what you have now. And it's you have to go through that. I don't care if you got one day and you're here because of it, or you have 10,000 days. You know the pain, and that's why we sit in these seats. I'll tell you that I'm currently from Mesa, Arizona. I've been there for 11 years. I'm previously from Portland, Oregon, where I did all my drinking, and then I got sober for 5 years and then moved to Arizona. Is that better? Okay. I got sober August 10th, 1989 in Portland, Oregon, and moved to Arizona 11 years ago. Willingness has been something that I didn't always have. I didn't have it before I came in, obviously. I wouldn't have kept drinking. I liked drinking. I loved everything about it. I didn't even mind the hangovers. I remember the first time of drinking and getting the spins and getting sick, and I couldn't wait to do it again. That's just not normal. I've learned that that's not normal. To me, that was very normal. Absolutely. Nothing but normal. Didn't see anything wrong with that. I let opportunity after opportunity go past my life when I was drinking, because I couldn't do anything but drink. Right before I came in the program, I had a little boy. He was 2 years old, and I couldn't even pick him up from daycare because I had to drink. And that's just the lack of willingness, to even do what was absolutely necessary in my life. I paid my rent, so I had a place to live. And then I thought, after that, everything's okay. Anything I did was okay. Whether I lied, cheated, or stole, it was okay, because I had my basic needs. It was all about me. One night after drinking, usual drink, a drunk, I wasn't any more drunk than I was any other time. It was just another drunk. And I came home, and I had what I consider a spiritual awakening. I came to believe that there's something else. There's something other than what I was doing. My mother died of alcoholism about 15 years, or about 10 years before I got sober. Right before she died of alcoholism, she came into the rooms Alcoholics Anonymous. So I knew about AA. I knew what it did. I knew what alcohol did. But I didn't connect the dots for me. My brother came in to the program about 7 years ahead of me, and I went to meetings for him. He brought me to meetings as well, and I didn't connect the dots. But this one night, for some reason, a light came on, and that was it, and I knew where to go. I knew that you guys had the answer. I didn't want what you have at that point. Oh, my God, I'm a loser. And but I knew there was no other answer for me. That was it. It was the last door. So I came to AA, and, you know, my God has a sense of humor. He's always jacking me around. I go to a meeting, and the guy at the meeting, I said, I need to get a big book. I knew that was the answer. I get a big book, and I'm looking okay. I'm not looking like a nuke. I know what I'm talking about because I've been to 3 meetings in my whole life. In fact, I brought people to AA. You got a problem, honey. We need to go to AA. I'll tell you. You know, and as bringing people to the meeting, I remember one time they said, we'll call on that girl back there. Oh, who, me? Oh, no, I'm not an alcoholic. And I'm just here visiting. And yeah, you keep coming back. Why would I keep coming back? I just told you. You know, okay, it's midnight, and normal people don't hang out in AA meetings at midnight? What? So I went to this meeting, and they said, well, you know, Bill has the books in the back of his trunk of his car, and he'll be here tomorrow. So you come back tomorrow. Okay, I came back tomorrow. No, Bill didn't show up. No, no, he'll be here tomorrow. I'm sure he will. He always comes on Wednesdays. Okay. I come back on Wednesday. I'm like, oh, I do not want to be here. Now, where's Bill in his car? I'm looking for the big trunk with all these books in it, you know. And, well, Bill didn't come again. I'm like, I'm giving up on this. I'm going to a different meeting. I know there's other meetings, and they have books. So I go to another meeting, ask for a book. Well, we're all out of books. You come back tomorrow. What is this, a joke? You know, so this went on for like 5 or 6 days. Now, to me, that wasn't me. That was my ego. I needed to get that book. I needed to be okay. But when I look back, I see willingness. I was willing to continue on. What the reason for my willingness is not always correct. But I was willing to do what I needed to do to get what I wanted. And I wanted to be okay. I don't think I wanted to get sober for the rest of my life, thank you very much, but I wanted to straighten out a few little problems that were going on in my life at that time. And maybe move in another direction. I kept going to meetings day after day, and, you know, lo and behold, could never get this same book that everybody had but me, you know. And I'm not going to ask you. I'm not going to ask you twice anyway. I'm going to come in late, sit there, and leave early if I can. Bolt out the door, scared to death. And so I talked to my brother, who had been in the program about 3 or 4 years, and he says, well, I went to this treatment center. It's an outpatient. You can still work. Nobody will know. It's at night. Instead of going to the bar, you go to the treatment center. They teach you all the language. Oh, I got to go there. And the insurance pays. Cool. So I go sign up to this treatment center, and they not only tell me that, oh yeah, you're an alcoholic, you're a drug addict. Excuse me? I don't think so. Again, facing the fact of willingness. Well, maybe I did some of that stuff, but, you know, I just really like to drink. But that stuff was to help me to continue drinking. And so they gave me another book, which I didn't read for like 6 years. Wasn't that willing. But I was willing to go to this treatment center just to get the book. Well, what happened was, I couldn't graduate, and I believed this. They couldn't hold me there. But I believed it. I believed what you told me. I had faith in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believed that I couldn't get out of that treatment center until I did my fourth and fifth step. I'm scratching stuff down. I'm writing stuff. And I'm talking to my counselor in treatment. I want my story. You give me my story. Everybody's got their story. I didn't get mine. And I need to study it before, because I don't like reading when I don't know what I'm talking about. I really thought that you guys were going to give me my story. You know, I had no clue, but I knew everything. I was willing to share my story in that treatment center. Just tell who you are, what's going on. I heard it for the first time. I heard my life for the first time. I got my big book, got out of there. Never went back, thank you. But I'm so grateful for that. The gift of willingness has been brought in through the steps, through you people talking to me, me believing in you. You are my direct link through a higher power. I can't reach my higher power without you. I have discovered that. I've tried to do it alone. I tried to do it alone for 32 years. Couldn't do it. I could stop drinking for periods of time. I could run on self-will, but I couldn't get that peace. I remember that first feeling of serenity, that what is this feeling that I'm feeling that feels like kind of calm or something? I don't really know what it is. And my sponsor telling me, well, that's serenity. That's what you pray for at every meeting. Wow. Like, I got it for 30 seconds, and on the way, I'm like, no, get, come back. How do you get it? God. You become willing. You participate. You show up. You get to the meeting early. Oh, what an idea. You shake hands. I got a home group, like you guys all suggested. Of course, then at the home group, they don't just want you to join the home group. Then they want you to do some work. You belong here. You're part of the family. Oh, crap. Chores. So, I know this. Okay, I'm home. Okay, so they asked me to open the meeting. So, and in Oregon, when you open the meeting, you get there an hour early, you make coffee, you get the birthday cake, you get the speaker. You set up all the chairs, you make the put everything together, make sure that everything's lined up, get all the coins, and make all the announcements. I'm like, what is everybody else doing? And it's always the newcomer. Woo, fish on. So they hooked me into that one, and it was 1 year commitment. But the only way you could get out of that commitment, because my home group didn't have a lot of participation, the only way out was to get another newcomer. So you start fishing about 9 months in. Give me around a while. And then you got to shut everything down, you know. But I was willing to do that. And I remember being scared to death, like, go to the podium and speak and share. And I had a three-year-old son at the time, and he used to grab a hold of my pants and walk up to the podium. And every meeting I'd do the announcements and the coins, and he would stand behind the podium and look out at everybody. You know, I was this little kid. And people remember that. It's so cool. You know, the boy now is 18 years old, just graduated from high school, and he knows you are his family. You know, there's some men sitting over here that just touched me. That it's him and I alone in Arizona. But they're here. If he needs anything, he calls them. You know, and they call him occasionally. And just letting you know that we're here for you. You guys taught me how to be a parent. I used to sit in the daycare. I didn't know how to be a parent. I used to sit in the daycare and watch how everybody else, all the teachers did it, you know. Willingness comes from God. It's a gift. It's an honor. It's amazing to me. And I get such miracles when I become willing. And I know what it's like to not become willing. I'm not doing that. Mm-mm. I've had several sponsors. I came to Arizona after being 5 years sober, and I was scared to death, and I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know how to act, and I wasn't brand new, so I couldn't, you know. You can only raise your hand. I'm new to Arizona for so long. And then it's like, well, you know, you're not really new after like 8 months. Well, why not? I feel new. I feel real scared and real new. I was 5 years sober, and and I wasn't connecting. And that wasn't you, it was me. I was isolating myself one more time, and I found myself going to a meeting one night, and it was a speaker's meeting. They had a participation going on, and it was at a different place. And I got there early, and there was no one there. And I drove around going, oh, no. You know, maybe it's the wrong place. They're not going to show. You know, my head. You know, it's all about me. All you people are here because of me, right? Yeah. And I'm there not figuring out why there's nobody there. And so I drove around for a while, and I figured that, you know what, maybe I'll just go over to this parking lot over here where there's a bar, and maybe I'll just have a soda. You know, in this bar. Yeah, that's a healthy idea. There's 9 stores on the way to the bar. No, I'm going to sit. And I'm sitting in this parking lot facing the Mason Lounge thinking, well, maybe I'll just go in there. And I'm alone. And that's just really not a healthy way. And I pause. I learned, you know what? Pause when agitated or doubtful. Just pause and say a prayer and ask for willingness to do the right thing. And you guys taught me that. You guys taught me that by standing at the turning point, those kind of turning points that are so destructive to our own life. And I love to destroy my life in any way I can. You know, I love to drink all the coffee I can and not eat. That's fun. I love to stay up and not sleep and then drink a lot of coffee and not eat. And, you know, I just love destructive behavior. Or eat lots of sugar on top of that. There you go. Yeah, and I'm like going 90 miles an hour anyway. I don't need any of that. I'm a high, strong person. So anyway, I'm sitting there facing this bar thinking, you know, maybe that's an option. And it was an option. It's always an option. And I know that. But what I also know is just pause. Take a breath. Turn to something greater than me. And if I would have just moved my face like 15 degrees, I'd have looked at a sign as big as this huge sign that said the Mason Lounge. It said, easy does it. Wow. No, didn't see that at all. La, la, la. Tunnel vision. But I did pause and I did turn around. I went back to that meeting. And by the end of that meeting, a girl came up to me and asked me to sponsor her. And I left there so grateful. Thank you. There is a God. I needed to be needed. I needed to connect. I needed the link. There was my link. I got one link. Then I got another link. Then I got, you know, I was willing to get a sponsor. I had to have a sponsor. I can't sponsor somebody if I don't have a sponsor. I need to hold both hands. You know, I can't give what I haven't got. I can, but it's bullshit. Even I know that. So, and I'm a good bullshitter, believe me. I even believe my own lies. Oh, yeah, not a problem. So, more coffee. I met some awesome people by getting involved, by willing to go beyond my fear, by willing to reach my hand out, by getting on committing. I got in committees when I first went to Arizona, and everybody got to know me because it was my way. I come from Oregon, let me tell you how we do it. And they didn't really want what I had. Go figure. I had to conform. I had to go with the flow. I'm always the fish going the other direction. Like, what? Come on, swim this way. And there's always a few that will go, okay, let's go. You know, big crowd going the wrong way. That's even better than one. But, you know, at one point I realized that that is not the easier, softer way. And that I need you. You guys can have this meeting without me, but I can't have it without you. I can't go on in the direction I want to head, in the right way of life, and have a happy, happy life without you. And I know because there's been people that I've had to let go of that have walked another direction. And I know that they're you know, shared with me, I don't like this, but I can't stop. And I've just said, you know, whenever you're ready or if you want a hand, I'm here. You know, I'm not going to close the door, but I'm not going to follow your path either. I'm willing to continue on my way of life. I was lost and misdirected and followed whatever path was most exciting to me for so many years, that I really, this is the most exciting path now for me. I mean, you guys are awesome. I mean, I can't believe going up the escalator last night, and there's this young kid, he's like 20 years old, and he's standing there, and he's an Alateen, and all these adults are just screaming. They just, everybody scream. Everybody starts screaming, and I looked at this kid, and he goes, "This happens about every 3 minutes. I can't believe." I know, those darn adults. What's wrong with them? You know, everybody's so excited to be here. Whether you speak the same language or not, we all speak the same language, the language of love, the connection of we've been through the trouble, the pain, and willing through whatever avenue gets us here to connect to something greater than me, to hear what you have to say, to identify. I want to know where you are and who you are and what your path has been, because I'll go through things in my life that are going to be so tough and so painful. I need your encouragement. I need to know. I went through a divorce about a year and a half ago. I thought I was going to die. I really thought I was going to die of this heartache. I was madly in love with this man, and I know he loved me, but he needed to turn left. And he turned left, and I continued forward. And my sponsor, I remember driving to a meeting, and I'm sobbing. I said, "I don't think I can make it. I can't go. I can't go without crying." She said, "You're going to put yourself together, and you're going to hold your head high with dignity, and you're going to come to this meeting, and you are not going to share about your problems. You are going to come here and you're going to share recovery. You're going to take 3 or 4 people that you feel close to, and you are going to share with those people what you're going through, and you're going to keep it respectful. This other person is in the same circle that you are, whether they are or not. You're going to carry your own dignity, and you're going to do this." And I was willing to do that, and I didn't see a good reason. I saw everybody else blubbering at the meetings, talking about their pain. Not fair, but I was willing because I trusted her, because she had twice the time as me, because I believe that she'd been through the pain, one pain or another, and my pain lasted much less time than I've seen other people go through due to that. I wrote about it, I did steps, I went to meetings, I talked about recovery. That gave me hope. I heard myself talk about my own hope. I bought a motorcycle. Thank you very much. I'm willing. Thanks to friends who went through the same stuff. I found a lot of other people that were going through the same thing. We went through it together with honor. It's still, as you can tell, sometimes painful. But I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for the experience I had with that man. I'm so grateful that he left me, so that I could keep on my own journey. You know, I was in bondage of a relationship that I couldn't see how I was holding myself back. And man, my life is great, great. I have pain and trouble just like everybody else, but man, I'm so honored to be here. I'm so happy that I'm able to share with you. I hope you got something out of it, because I did. And wow, keep coming back.
Okay, now for our third speaker, we have had Bill H. from Idaho.
Hi, everybody. My name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic. And so very, very grateful to be with you today. There have been several side subjects talked about today already that I really wanted to comment on. And one of them was the subject of crying. And I'm one of these who's going to do that sometime during the next half hour. But that's okay. What popped in my mind when that was mentioned was my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was a podium participation meeting, and I had come in there and sat as close to the door as I could just because I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I figured I was going to have to get up and run at some point. Probably sometime before you laid me on the table and bent my arm behind my back and promised and made me promise never to drink again. Somewhere in there, I was going to get the hell out of there. I knew that. But for whatever reason, I stuck around through that whole meeting. And before closing, they asked me if I had anything I wanted to say. And, you know, I wasn't used to talking from podiums. I'm still not used to talking from podiums. But I went up to that podium, and I looked out at that vast crowd of 6 or 8 people. And all I could say was that my name was Bill, and I don't like myself very well. And I began to cry. But even at that moment, I knew that I had found the one place in the world that I could be me, whatever me happened to be for that day. And I still believe that today. You know, whatever God brings my way today, you know, that's who I am, and that's what I am. And I knew that Alcoholics Anonymous, within Alcoholics Anonymous, it was okay to cry. And I, through the years, tried to do something about it, and I'm powerless. You know, I just plain give up. But Mark also mentioned that set-aside prayer, and I heard the same prayer, slightly different version of the same prayer from a fellow a few years back. And it's something that I've incorporated on my life when I'm really desperate. You know, my home group is the West Side Group in Idaho Falls, Idaho. My first meeting was March 11th, 1973. And my sobriety date is March 11th, 1973. And I can only say that it was by the grace of a God, that a loving, caring God, that I found an Alcoholics Anonymous, so that's a true statement today, because it was very little of anything, if anything, that I did. But I want to say that, you know, I'm not a speaker. I love to talk, but I'm not a speaker. But I'm at a point in my life where it's becoming more and more difficult for me to maintain a line of thought. I mean, if I'm at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and start talking, I'll wander all over, you know. And I don't want to do that today because, you know, we're supposed to be sticking to a topic. One thing is, you know, the essence of growth. And so it's necessary for me to work seriously off some notes as I go through this, and I apologize for that because it's not something that I really, it's not the way that I was taught to talk in Alcoholics Anonymous, but, you know, we do what we can do. Actually, I should be terrified to be here this morning. You know, there's a lot of people here, you know, but early, I know also that today that by being a member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been given a set of tools that I can use in my daily life. And one of those tools was given to me by my sponsor, original sponsor, who's sitting right back there. And early on in the program, what it was the cases of my first birthday in Alcoholics Anonymous, so that would have been 31 years ago. He thought it would be just a wonderful idea if I could, in recognition of my birthday, if I came up to a Sunday morning speaker meeting and talked and told my story in front of this group of a tremendous group of 30 or 40 people. And I think he was laughing when he was doing this. I'm pretty sure he was. But when I shared with him just the complete terror that I felt about having to get up and speak in front of all these people, he gave me one of those tools. And what that tool was that courage is nothing more than turning your fear over to God, you know. And that's a tool that I use in many areas of my life since. It's been one of the greatest tools I've ever received. I use it. I'm using it right now, you know. A few years later, I was given another tool by a fellow. And it was a tool that you could use in a situation like this where you're talking, you know, in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what it was that how can you be afraid of screwing up in front of a group of people who have spent their lives screwing up. You know? And I love that one because it allows me to feel, you know, a oneness with you all. I've looked around and I haven't seen the perfect individual yet. They may be, I see you, you know. But there's some other tools that I've adopted, and a couple of them that I would like to start off my talk today with, and they have to be from the same fellow who gave me that set-aside prayer. These prayers go something like, God, set aside my ego so that I may be with you. And then there's, God, allow me to be an instrument of thy will and thy love today. You know, and that's what I hope to do. The topic we've been asked to share on, as you're well aware, is willingness, the essence of growth. And I learned quite a while back, is that if I think I know something, I better go to the dictionary. And so what I did was went to the dictionary and looked up the definition of what those words are. And Webster defines willingness as doing freely with pleasure. He defines essence as the fundamental characteristic of anything, and growth, the gradual development of a plant or an animal. Now, I know there's many types of willingness. And I know that every positive thing that I have in my life today is just in direct proportion to the amount of willingness to change that I'm able to conjure up. The more willingness to change that I have, the happier that I am. What I'd like to share with you today is my thoughts on what I think I know about the fact that basic requirement for spiritual growth is, per Webster's definition, to approach change with joyful anticipation. Now, I don't know about you, but I find that sentence hilarious. You know, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, joyful anticipation was not one of the ones, the things I had, you know. But I love that. The basic requirement of spiritual growth is, per Webster's definition, to approach change with joyful anticipation. I arrived at Alcoholics Anonymous with no willingness of any kind, absolutely devoid of any type of willingness. I didn't come to that first meeting because I wanted to. I came because that woman that I was married to didn't think I would. You know, don't ever tell an alcoholic they can't do something. You know, and that little lady sitting right back there today. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I wanted to be happy, joyous, and free. I came just because I was a stubborn ass, you know. Which works. You know, obviously it works. Things were not good in my world. God and I were on speaking terms. I was pretty sure that I was on the top of his going to hell list. Although I could not acknowledge that I was an alcoholic, I knew that I was going to suffer a painful death. The thoughts of suicide were a constant companion for me. In my world, things were the way they were, and they were never going to be any different. I mean, that's just the way life was. There was nothing I could do about it. There was no need for willingness, because, you know, if things are never going to change, why should you even bother to be willing? You know, so there was no need to have any willingness. And because there was no need for willingness, there was no possibility of change, you know. And with that possibility of change, there was no hope. And that's what I was when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. God knew that it would be impossible for willingness to survive in that environment that I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was necessary that he provide a seedbed for that willingness to grow. So he directed me to that first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I walked away from that meeting with hope for the first time in my life, or at least the first time that I could remember, I had that feeling of hopefulness. Initially, you know, all I had was that seedbed. All I had was that little bit of hope. I still had no willingness. and I didn't know where to find it. The man who was to become my sponsor suggested that perhaps what I should do is pray for the willingness to be willing. And I thought, well, no, that's really a novel concept. I hadn't thought of that one. But I said, it sounded real great, but when you're not on speaking terms with God, how do you pray to God? And then someone else suggested, well, why don't you find yourself a God you can pray to? You know, and that just went against everything spiritual that I'd ever heard of. You know, that was just an amazing concept for me. But though I didn't have, you know, any faith, I had been given a little hope. So I went on a God interviewing binge. You know, I don't know if you've ever been on one of those, but that's what I went on. My hope was that I might find a little bit of what you people had, just a little bit. I didn't know what it was, but I knew that, you know, you talked about God, and so maybe that's, you know, maybe that's what I needed to do. Now, the first meeting that I went to was held in the same little schoolroom where I had gone to school in the second grade. So I knew a little bit about the layout, you know, so I checked out the doorknob as a God, and you know, that wasn't really satisfactory, and the all-mysterious electrical switch that I'd heard you people talk about, and all these other sorts of things, and it just really nothing fit. And then the thought came to me that, what about that big eucalyptus tree that was outside the window of that little schoolroom? You know, that's a tree that I'd played with under when I was a child, right outside the window. I said, yeah, you know, so when I thought about that tree, I felt a little peace, just a little piece of peace, you know. So I thought, well, you know, maybe that tree, you know, would make a good God. And so I adopted that eucalyptus tree as my God. And earlier I mentioned the concept of a loving, caring God. And this tree became my first concept of a caring God. I'd sit in those early meetings, and when you guys start talking about your gods, I'd look out that window and see if my God was still there. That tree was always there. You know, it was always there. And so I had a God. I eventually found a more satisfying concept of God and to replace that tree. And it's kind of spooky, but after I found this different concept to replace the tree, I looked out that meeting room window one night, and that tree was gone. And I found out later that tree hadn't been there for over 20 years. You know? It's kind of spooky. I can't explain that, so I just assume it was my AA God reaching out to me and giving me a concept of a God I could believe in and give me a little hope and all these other sorts of things. When I could accept nothing else. You know, that tree was all I had it, you know, when I needed. And I prefer that assumption over to thinking that I'm crazier than a bed bug. You know, it's just much more satisfying. There were many aspects of my life that I was unwilling to change. And I don't remember which problem area I was talking to, but I went to my sponsor one day and I very patiently explained my dilemma to him. I explained how and why it was absolutely impossible for me to change. You know, I was the way I was, and that's the way it was always going to be. And he was a very kind, gentle man. He is a very kind, gentle man. And what he told me was that, he says, Bill, he says, when I came home from work tonight, my teenage son asked me if I would do something for him. And I said, I can't, son. And then he said, my son said, how about substituting I can't for I choose not to? You know, at that moment, I hated that man. But everything I had, I hated, because what he had done is taken responsibility for my life and thrown it right back in my own lap. And I didn't want it, you know. What I ended up with was the knowledge that I, in fact, could change if only I was willing to do so, you know. And I didn't want to know that. I didn't want to know that, but I could not deny it. The key to becoming willing for me has only come through experience and pain. I have come to understand that God's plan for me is much better than anything I can ever envision for myself. But that's not been an easy lesson for me to learn. I had spent long hours attempting to form the world into what I thought it should be, trying to determine the limits of what I can and cannot change. And in that process, I had discovered the color of wisdom. The color of wisdom for me is black and blue. It seems to be the only way I can learn is going out and beating my head against the world. You know, and that's still as true today as it was the day I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. There may be an easier way, but you know, I have not been willing to find that yet. Learning what I can and cannot change is not the real problem. The lack of willingness to accept I can't always have things my way, now that's the problem. I make it sound like I haven't enjoyed my time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and nothing could be farther from the truth. I love Alcoholics Anonymous with everything that I have. I love being with you today. Because you're here, I'm here, and it's very necessary that I be here. You know? I'm not saying there haven't been times with pain and sorrow and headache in this journey, because there have. There's been a lot of that over the years. But I think that's part of everybody's journey. I don't think I'm unique in that. I think that's part of what they call life. Early in sobriety, I was introduced to a man of philosophy. And he shared a few things with me. He shared with me that it is precisely because we as alcoholics have experienced such great pain that we now are able to feel such great joy. You know, how can a person who's never experienced unhappiness really know what it feels like to be happy? He doesn't know. He has nothing to compare it with. So how can we, I don't know what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is, because we know what pain is, and we know well what pain is, joy just feels a hell of a lot better, you know, than someone who has never experienced that pain. This man went on to say that if we lack the willingness to step out into life, if we lack the willingness to accept the results of that action, then we'll have gone through our life without having laughed all our laughter or cried all our tears. You know, if I'm not willing to go out and meet life on life's terms, in effect, I have not lived. You know, so it's necessary, if I want to experience a full life, to expect pain in my life, you know, and joy, and a lot of other things that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've discovered there are some things about me that I can change. Things that are like what a father is, what a man is, what a husband is. But I think most importantly, I can even change my concept of God. Early on in the program, I had two gods. I had the God of my childhood, and I had the higher power that I'd found in Alcoholics Anonymous. Initially, I had to label them differently. I had to call my first God of my childhood God, and I had to call the God that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous my higher power. Because I found if I call them both God, eventually my thought processes would get me back to that fearful, punishing definition of God that I knew as a child. And so, you know, whenever I talked about God, I knew that I was talking about the fearful, punishing God that I knew as a child. And when I talked about my higher power, I knew that I was with you. You know. What I've had to do is go through and develop a concept of a higher power that's so great and so wonderful, I have very little problem turning my will and my life over to that God. And that's the God that I have today. The God that I have today who expects nothing more of me than to be happy, joyous, and free. No, that ain't bad. That's not bad at all. You know. I say all that with the understanding that periodically my ego reasserts itself and we'll have a little disturbance for a while. But that vision of that loving God is still there, you know, and the relationship reestablishes itself just as soon as I become willing to be patient with my higher power. You know. And this is a concept that was suggested to me early on in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It just took me 30 years to adopt it. You know, I mean, what's the big deal? You know, but without a doubt, the single most troublesome area of my life in sobriety has been my relationship with God. And I don't mean my higher power. I mean the God of my childhood. I've never really understood the basis of my fearful punishing childhood concept. My siblings, they were born in exactly the same environment that I had, and they don't have that concept of God. So why did I? And I don't know. I've never found that answer. But for a number of years, I have accepted and understood that this concept was not necessarily related to the religion that I was raised into. That it might quite possibly be from a different source. You know? So I've been wanting to open up my mind to a certain extent. But because of my willingness to be with you today and to share with you today, I've gained a little insight into that issue. I had some concern about sharing that insight with you today, and I questioned whether or not this was the appropriate place for me to do that. So I went to a person whose judgment I respect more than any person that I know. A lady whose opinion I almost always agree with. That same lady I needed so desperately to prove wrong about my willingness to attend my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous so long ago. My lover, my partner, my friend, my wife. Her advice to me was, if this was an experience that you had and trying to prepare for this presentation today, if you felt it in your heart, and it's probably appropriate to share. And so I'll proceed. About 2 weeks ago, while in the process of trying to organize my thoughts for this talk, this whole subject of my relationship with that fearful punishing God kept bugging me. And I've known for a long time that what was going on was that it appeared to me that God and I were in a custody battle for my soul. Well, who was going to have control of my soul? But I've never been able to figure out the basis of that conflict, you know. Why should I have such a struggle? And why am I so set against organized religion? And I guess God figured out it was time to reveal a little bit more to me. In my mind, he returned me to an event that occurred when I was a very young child, probably no more than 3 years old. The scene was the church that I attended as a child. And I was in our little Sunday school room, and we were being taught a new song. It's a simple little song that most of us have probably heard 1,000 times. But as near as I could tell, it was the first time that I had ever heard it. And the words that they were trying to teach me were, Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. Little ones to him belong, they are weak and he is strong. And while I was trying to sing those words, tears welled up in my eyes. And I didn't want to belong to Jesus. I wanted to belong to my mommy and daddy. You know? The words I was singing said that Jesus was so strong that he could do anything that he wanted. I was afraid that Jesus, you know, with that power, would take me away and I would never see my mommy and my daddy again. You know? And I had totally misinterpreted the words and intent of that song. But as a little kid, I didn't know that. I think that was probably the day the battle lines were drawn. That may well have been the most important day of my life up to now. Without a doubt, that day has made me who I am today. No, I didn't know what to do with the experience. It was just kind of wow. And so I just opened up a little door in my head and stuck it away and stuck it in storage. And I was sharing this part of my experience a little over a week ago at a camp out with my friend Kathy, who was sitting here. And I was sharing this story with her, but I left out the part about sticking it in my head because I afraid she probably would think less of me if I told her I couldn't face this problem, you know. And so I shared this part of my story, and she says, "Oh, you poor thing. If something like that had happened to me, I'd open up a room in my head and stick it in there, you know, until I could face it." You know? I'm not sure whether to feel better that because Kathy and I are, you know, so much alike or not. You know, it's still up to question. But every now and then, I peek into that little room, and what I see has never changed. What I see in that room is a little green-eyed boy, a green-eyed, blonde-haired boy. His name is Billy. He appears to be very patiently waiting for someone or something. He's sitting on a stool on the edge of a cloud. It's a three-legged stool. The legs aren't labeled, but if they were, I'd know what they'd say. And I know that. I know that when I return home from this convention, I'm going to have to go into that room and introduce myself to that little boy. We're going to have to get to know each other. We're going to have to get to know each other well enough to trust each other. We'll need that trust if we're going to straighten out the years of misunderstanding. It will be another opportunity for me to turn my fear over to God. I'd like to thank you people for giving me little Billy and for giving me the opportunity to meet with him. I want to also thank you all for allowing me to be with you today. Because you're here, I'm here, and it's very necessary that I be here. Thank you.
And I'm Paulette, and I'm still an alcoholic. I forgot to mention at first, I'm from Washington, D.C. And, yes. And my home group is the Brightwood Group in Upper Northwest. So anytime you hear visiting D.C., just come on through. It's the best home group in town. And I just wanted to say that willingness for me early on when I was tricked into making some coffee. And everybody in the meeting said, "Ooh, this coffee is good. Who's making that coffee?" And they said, "That newcomer over there named Paulette." And I've made coffee for almost 2 months, you know, and I wanted to know when I was going to get paid. And they told me, "You keep coming back," you know. And I kept coming back. I had the willingness to keep coming back thinking I was going to get paid. And it took me almost a whole year to finally realize I wasn't going to get paid. They paid me no mind. That's what they did. I'd like to thank our speakers. And thank you, and with that, we can close with the Serenity Prayer and the Lord's Prayer. Yes.
Don't let it leak on the floor, for God's sake.
God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change things I can, and willingness. And willingness. We're good? Bless you, Bobby.